Today on Straight Talk Africa, a look at the role and influence the African diaspora has on the continent. That discussion is coming up next, right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America headquarters in Washington. I'm Vincent McCorry, in for Shaka Sali. Today we are discussing the role and influence the African diaspora has on Africa. Now, the African Union defines its diaspora as people of African origin living outside the continent. The United States and other nations have created initiatives and opportunities to engage directly with the African diaspora. Straight Talk Africa's Paul Diho reports.
The term African diaspora is diverse, multifaceted, multigenerational, demographic, irrespective of their citizenship and nationality. The diaspora can be a powerful force for the development of Africa, especially through remittances, but perhaps more importantly, through the promotion of trade, investments, research, innovation, knowledge, and technology transfers. Remittances to sub-Saharan Africa grew almost 10% to $46 billion in 2018, according to the World Bank's latest migration and development brief. Margaret Mwonge, a native of Uganda, mobilizes her community to fundraise and collectively send money back home to help communities.
A lot of money is being remitted to families back home, and that is done individually. And it has a lot of impact because it's even a factor in the budget. But if all these resources are leveraged collectively, the impact is much greater because you are not targeting an individual family, a brother or sister. You are targeting a community.
Ethiopia, Africa's second most populous nation after Nigeria, is arguably one of the fastest growing economies, largely due to its diaspora and the country's new policies encouraging them to return home. For example, this newly opened hotel is owned by an Ethiopian couple who migrated back from Washington, D.C. It's part of a growing series of businesses that started by Ethiopians returning from the diaspora to invest in their native land.
We wanted to create something new here in Ethiopia that's never been seen before. One of the unique things about Washington Hotel is our presidential penthouse suite. It's really unique because the construction was done in a very dynamic way that separates us from any other hotel here in Ethiopia.
Business officials said the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, home to the African Union headquarters, has tripled its number of hotels in the last 3 years. Roads and buildings are now a regular part of the city's landscape. The construction industry is being driven by the country's growing economy and Ethiopians returning from abroad.
The technology flow coming from abroad through the diaspora will be in the human aspect, soft skill, and also management aspect, and also in the hardware aspect. So they're going to be both an opportunity and a threat, but we believe in competition.
Another area where the diaspora is shaping the narrative is the documentation of the African story. In the Gambia, the Fahen Network, a foundation run by a family of Gambian women in the diaspora, is promoting literacy and education back home. Anna Faye, her two sisters, and their mother, Lucy Faye, started the Fahen Network in 2007 as a hobby. But it has grown into a powerful tool to influence young children and help them discover their heritage.
Africans need to take over the narrative of telling the African story. We want to use the African experience, the African voice, the African perspective to teach others, but also ourselves, so we can be proud to say, here is a children's series written by Africans for African children, and of course, the rest of the world can also learn from it.
As diaspora groups continue advocating for democracy and human rights across the continent, Africa's most powerful resource is proving to be the caring attitude of its people. Paul Ndiho, VOA News.
Well, thanks a lot, Paul. Joining us in studio today, our three guests, Yetunde Odubesan-Omede, visiting professor of global affairs and politics at Farmingdale State College, Department of History, Politics and Geography, and a member of United People for African Congress. Emira Woods, who works with SHINE, a global campaign dedicated to ending energy poverty. She's also a member of Africa Rising for Justice, Peace and Dignity. And Gizao Legese, founding member of Vision Ethiopia, a forum of intellectuals created to rethink the future of Ethiopia. A warm welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Great to be with you.
Now, if I may start with you, Dr. Yetunde, the Nigerian diaspora, for example, is like, I think by some estimates, up to 300,000 here in the United States. Mm-hmm. How would you describe its structures, organization, across the states?
Right about now, we have what we call the Nigerians in Diaspora Organization. We also have the United People's African Congress. So that organization is what we call an umbrella organization, the NIDO, which tries to bring together all of the Nigerians in every single state, or also around the world, under that one umbrella, to see how we can ensure that the diaspora directly engage with those who are in elected office back in Nigeria, but also put forth an agenda of policies that will help to be more progressive to the society of Nigeria. And with UPAC, what I see with that is that it's more of a large umbrella, and under that it encapsulates the 54 African countries. And so it represents the needs and the concerns that those in the diaspora have in their respective homelands.
Yes, and I should have mentioned that you are a native of Nigeria. That's why I asked you that question. Mm-hmm. And we know that there are so many other, you know, diasporians across the United States.
Absolutely.
We cannot bring all 54 countries here.
Absolutely.
But you, you know, possibly will represent some of the thoughts and, you know,
Absolutely.
Views of many Africans. Now, Emira, who happens to have origins in Liberia, could also just kind of chime in a little bit on what you make of the organization of the Liberian diaspora. We know that they have been in the United States for years, even throughout the time of turmoil in Liberia. How would you describe how it's organized, whether it's a common agenda or not?
Well, Vincent, thank you so much for focusing on this topic. I think the Liberian community is very diverse and very broad. Mm-hmm. Overall, I would say that many have one foot on each side. They have one foot here in the U.S. and one foot on the Africa side, and are working to bring their voice, their influence in a number of spheres on both sides of the Atlantic. So mm-hmm. you have Liberians, Rich Ludenis, quite successful
Absolutely.
Business leaders yeah. in the U.S. that mm-hmm. understand their roots and mm-hmm. actually use their origins to propel their business initiatives. They are active, Rich Ludenis was the founder of Seabreeze, mm-hmm. now owning mm-hmm. Essence magazine. Mm-hmm. So you have a cultural icon that was rooted in the African-American community and that's now being kind of directed and under the leadership of someone who is from Liberia, right?
Yeah.
I think you have also Liberians that have seized the political mantle, and you have people, you know, for example, Wilma Collins, who ran for office and won in a red district in Montana, is now mayor of Montana, mm-hmm. who came out of a lived experience as a refugee mm-hmm. to be a mayor of Montana, in the midst of the Trump era. I think these are some of the successes, but what you have is a community that has been organized politically, that has been organized in terms of its economic power and economic role, and that is actually seizing new opportunities to influence both the home country, but also the U.S. and the world.
Yes. And Giza, we just saw in that package some of the Ethiopians who lived here have even gone back home. But there's a huge population of Ethiopians who live in this area. I live in the state of Virginia in the United States. I kind of almost speak Amharic because of the sheer number of Ethiopians that I encounter in my life. How would you describe how this community is organized in this region and perhaps in the entire United States?
Thanks for the opportunity first. Ethiopians are politically quite fractured. So when we talk about politics, most Ethiopians who live in the diaspora are fractured along many different areas. However, all of us, have set up democratic groups or advocacy groups for democracy and human rights in order to support movements back home, advocate for prisoners, for political prisoners, advocate for accountable government. So that's one area. On another area, as you said, we are many Ethiopians, and there is a significant number of Ethiopians who are much more interested or who believe that economic investment will change the country rather than politics. So there is a lot of economic investment in different parts of the country. The other is the technology transfer. Most Ethiopians who are in the diaspora, as you said, in universities and different high-tech companies, do go back and teach a semester or two. Medical doctors, nurses go back.
I know we'll kind of try to break it down as we continue with our conversation. We kind of established something I really wanted us to kind of talk about briefly about the structure and the organization. And these are just three countries, but we have 54 countries. Mm-hmm. But I think many of the Africans on the continent and others here can relate with what we are talking about. Mm-hmm. There are so many of our people from our continent who are here and they're organized in some way or fashion. But if now we can zero in, you know, the actual interaction with the continent and the kind of benefits that are being transferred. Mm-hmm. Perhaps let's start with the whole question of we mentioned it in our package, remittances. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Everybody in Africa or everybody who lives in the diaspora sends money to the continent. I think Nigerians perhaps send up to $6.1 billion in 1 year. Across the continent is about $45 billion, which exceeds even what gets in through international organizations and donors. But if you may talk about it a little bit. How do you see it actually directly impacting the continent, the economies of our countries, say Nigeria or any other country that you may be familiar with?
You know, the interesting thing about remittances is that when we talk about the influence and the impact that Africans in the diaspora have on the African continent, we always boil it down to remittances, and we understand the economic shape around that. But to be honest, I think there are a lot more important areas that oftentimes are ignored, and I believe, like, in terms of social entrepreneurship, in terms of civil society, yes, remittances are extremely important, and yes, a large number does help with the economic development and progression of the countries. But however, I also do see the power that Africans in the diaspora who are using, it's we used to call it brain drain, right? Mm-hmm. But to be honest, it's a brain gain. And why it's a brain gain? Because we have some skills and acquisitions and knowledge that we use and have learned here due to exposure and education, and we take that back home, right? Mm-hmm. We take that back home. We use that to solve certain issues that possibly may not be able to be solved on ground by those who are on ground. We are able to facilitate various dialogues. We're able to bring that knowledge, and that's extremely important. And there's certain things that are sometimes worth more than money and worth more than remittances, and that's the function of the brain. Okay. That's the intellectual capacity that we also wield.
Okay. Now, you're kind of trying to read my brain, because that was my question, but it was supposed to come a bit later.
Yeah.
But that's good. Yeah. So we can also look at all the other various kind of ways in which Africans are contributing to the continent. Mm-hmm. And so, Emira, if I may come to you, I know that I've met you everywhere there is anything about Africa, whether it is on the continent, in the United States, or anywhere else. You've been at the forefront advocating for energy, for elimination of poverty, and I think everything there is about the interest of Africans. So how do you see your role? How do you see the role of the Africans in the diaspora, not only in how they're organized here, but in effecting change on the continent?
I see the diaspora as pivotal. We have one foot on each side. We have the benefit of insight, influence, and you know, they say, to whom much is given, much is expected. So the demands on us as the diaspora are many, but we have risen to meet those demands. And I think what you see, you have examples all around. This brilliant Nigerian woman, you know, Jessica Matthews, who is, she's an engineer and innovator, but she created the ingenuity of how can we bring energy with soccer balls, with jump ropes? Yeah. How do we bring energy to our communities that have been so marginalized? Mm-hmm. And how do we use our creativity to leapfrog into future kind of more just economies and also more sustainable environmentally sound practices? I think you have examples like this all over the U.S. and all over the world of Africans who are bringing their skills to bear for the benefit of the continent and the world. Mm-hmm. I think you also see the influence of the diaspora in everything, from music, you know. So clearly you've got diaspora mm-hmm. musicians mm-hmm. that are influencing top 40 hits all over the world.
Yeah.
You've got diaspora fashion designers. Mm-hmm. You look at, you know.
Look at you.
Well, we hold them up. Because
yeah.
they are, you go into Forever 21, exactly. these mainstream
yeah.
stores,
yeah.
and
yeah.
you see African print, right? So you see the influence of the diaspora yeah. in so many ways. You have diaspora leaders mm-hmm. that are writing children's books.
Yeah.
Dr. Robtel Paley, Chantel mm-hmm. Bright, they mm-hmm. are writing children's books, mm-hmm. understanding that to reach the mind of children early on will liberate, will revolutionize mm-hmm.
yeah.
our continent mm-hmm. and our world. Mm-hmm. So you see the diaspora in so many forms, using its brilliance mm-hmm. and also influencing. And
yeah.
of course, let us not forget, we have, you know, the amazing Ilhan Omar,
yeah.
who has come out of a refugee experience
Absolutely.
To be a powerful member of Congress, shaping not only U.S. policy, mm-hmm. but global policy. And I think it is just the beginning yeah. of what the diaspora can do.
And the powerful voices of women. Gizelle, if you don't watch out, we are outnumbered. We're just two of us here. So you better put in your voice on that. I wanted to ask you, when we talk about the skills transfer, you are, mm-hmm. for example, an intellectual yourself, you're an IT expert, mm-hmm. and you talked about your organization earlier on. We were talking about Vision Ethiopia. You're kind of looking ahead beyond now for the development of Ethiopia. Question, though, is to what extent are those back home in Ethiopia, for example, accommodating that, helping by creating structures that facilitate the return of mm-hmm. Ethiopians who are abroad, the mm-hmm. transfer back of those skills, the brain gain mm-hmm. that we're just talking about? Mm-hmm. To what extent is that happening?
Okay, before I answer that, I want to also chime in. There is yeah. another African from Eritrea, yeah. Congressman Nugus. He's,
mm-hmm. Yes,
so he's also from Colorado. He's
Colorado.
A member of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you asked a very important question. I think we are lucky. Ethiopia is lucky. In the last year, Ethiopia has been transformed from a pure dictatorship to a reform. Mm-hmm. Now the government, the different agencies of the government are collaborating to enable diaspora elements to contribute in their areas of expertise. So there are, for example, if you take Vision Ethiopia, we had a forum, a conference to address all types of issues from corruption to democratic mm-hmm. transition to diversity. And we are having a second one in a couple of weeks in Bahar Dar. The other issue is Ethiopians are building a database where individual Ethiopians can insert their skills. That database will be matched with the different universities and higher institutions mm-hmm. or government agencies, so that it will be matched and the opportunity will be there.
Mm-hmm.
Some agencies also, the government agencies, are directly signing MOUs, Memorandum of Understandings, mm-hmm. in order to work on joint projects.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dr. Isunde, mm-hmm. you know, there's also another issue that always comes up when you talk about people in the diaspora and those back home.
Mm-hmm.
It is, of course, the disparity in the development level
mm-hmm.
between here and the countries back in Africa.
Absolutely.
And many times the people in the diaspora are being accused of going back home with their noses up in the air and trying to impose what is seen as Western ways, Western values, Western standards, when actually they should leave Africa to kind of craft African solutions to African problems. What's your take on that?
I don't necessarily agree with that, because Africans in the diaspora very much know of the history of African countries. So Western imposition and Western ideals have been imposed during colonial times. So that's not something that is new sort of to the forefront. I think what we are bringing back is a sort of experience that we as Africans have experienced in the diaspora.
How about the expectations where a person goes back home and they feel like the bureaucracy, perhaps
it's,
the
right.
kind of management of things is
right.
kind of too inhibiting. And,
yeah.
then when you question that, mm-hmm. what is the response usually?
But that's what having exposure gives you. When
yeah.
you're able to see a system differently,
yeah.
right? You're able to now question situation, then things are in place. So those who are unable to see a different type of system automatically may assume that this is normal, right? Or this is normal behavior. This is the way that a government is supposed to run. But when you come outside of those countries, right, and you're able to compare and contrast, you're able to say, well, these policies may be better, or well, this government should be run this way, or here are some of the suggestions or recommendations or concerns that I have in terms of what is good governance, right? And we're not saying good governance is westernized government. We're saying good governance, right, is ensuring that, one, there's free and fair elections, mm-hmm. one, there are institutions of education, right, that provide adequate education, that healthcare systems are running effectively, that people are able to find employment and live a decent life and have decent wages. These are some of the composite of what we call good governance. Mm-hmm. And it's not that, and these expectations, yes, we should have expectations. Even the people back home should have expectations of their elected leaders, in which they do. And then sometimes it's not upheld, mm-hmm. right? And that's where we come in a sense, and lend that voice and lend that helping hand and lend that advocacy that says, no, we understand what's going on. We're here to support you. We understand the plight. And whatever we can do and use our platform and the opportunity that we have to push, you know, opportunities and to push, you know, prosperity and progression forward, that's what we want to do. Now, so we are all on the same page here.
Somebody may say, well, that is what we wish, and that is where perhaps the response and reaction of some people. But, Emira, is that something you've traveled across the continent? Mm-hmm. Do you find that as a kind of a... Yeah, sure. Because there are countries where, I know, I wouldn't mention a particular country where the government and some government officials actually treat a person from the diaspora almost as an enemy. Mm-hmm. They see a person who is from some other place or who has come back home to try and change things, and sometimes they see you almost like an agent of some Western interest. Yeah.
Mm. Well, I can say, you know, even of my own country, Liberia, coming out of 26 years of war, the question of dual citizenship for Liberians living in the diaspora has been very hotly debated. That's and right. I think, you know, it's a surprise. You know, sometimes to see the resistance, you know, at a time when the whole continent is moving towards, you know, citizenship for all on the continent, and for the diaspora to be welcomed through the African Union with African Union passports and the rest. It's almost like, you know, going against the grain. But you still have these tendencies of, we were here during the war. We know it best, so let us decide, right? And I think those tensions are there, particularly in countries emerging from crisis. But I do think that the influence and you know, potential power of the diaspora will continue to have its way. I think it will continue to be seen as an asset. It has been historically. I mean, it isn't recent. We've had diasporas really for centuries on our continent, and they've influenced from, you know, W.E.B. Du Bois, you know, Blyden. All of these have historically had an influence on the shaping of the continent. And we have to also understand, we have had continental leaders. Kwame Nkrumah, our Pan-Africanist hero, right, who was educated in the U.S. in historically black colleges here. So you have had these ties that bind the diaspora and the continent. And I think it is important that the African Union is recognizing the power of the diaspora, understanding that the diaspora, with five regions of Africa, diaspora is region six. This is a critical component of the future of the continent, and reaching out in fundamental institutional ways to incorporate the diaspora in policy making and the rest. I think these are all steps in the right direction.
All right. Now, Gizelle, in terms of people returning home, and the Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed of Ethiopia has actually called on Ethiopians to go back home to invest, but also probably to stay back there. Mm-hmm. Do you get the sense that many Ethiopians are willing to go back home, given the, you know, perhaps the stage of development of the country, and perhaps some social issues and even political environment?
Yeah, I think a vast number of Ethiopians would like to go back home. Actually, a number of Ethiopians, I mean, I think 30-40% of Ethiopians living in the diaspora already have built houses in Ethiopia. Mm. But I think the more important point is, even those who do not want to go back to Ethiopia, people who, as I said earlier, teach and work, have skills, are willing to go and teach in colleges, not live there permanently, but contribute in their areas of expertise. So the other thing, what Dr. Abiy has done is he has opened up the embassy to all the diaspora. Mm-hmm. It's very simple now to go to the embassy, and the embassy's outreach is very empowering to the rest of Ethiopia. Ethiopians are, as you guys probably know, a very close society, if I may say. So our really... Mira was talking about 1 foot here, 1 foot there. I suspect in our case it's 1.5 feet there, 1 here, because we eat the same food if you come to my house and all that stuff. But to touch on to the issue of expectations, I just came back from Ethiopia. Yeah. It is true when you go to Ethiopia, the expectation that we have is not the same as the expectation of the people who live there. Mm-hmm. But that opens their eyes. Usually those who complain are the service providers or the politicians, because we are introducing. Usually I give an example. If your phone is 3G and somebody using 5G, you are shaped to expect a 3G environment. Mm-hmm. Once you have a 5G, you expect a much faster thing. So if we express those expectations in an affirmative way, in a positive way, rather than in patronizing way, I think it is a good thing. It's true, our expectations are higher. Sometimes there are resentments about that. But when we look at it, we are to go forward, I think expectations have to be raised. Another last point I want to mention is, I think it's good for the African AU to recognize the diaspora. I believe the AU is primarily not a democratic institution. So I would advocate, like our group, we should be, the diaspora should be the one who should outreach to the people of Africa and empower them to go forward.
Yes. Now, in a few minutes before we go to break, Dr. Yetunde, there has always been like, groups of African politicians, you know, governors and others always coming to town, mm-hmm. especially very close to elections. Mm-hmm. Why? What is the role of the African diaspora in the local politics?
I think it's a big one. I think recently, not too long ago, there was a leadership conference, diaspora leadership conference, happening at the Nigerian consulate, mm-hmm. where some of the elected officials did come from Nigeria, come from Abuja, to discuss how they can engage the diaspora community in Nigeria. And you know, Nigeria passed the Diaspora Commission, which is a commission-based organization federally funded by the government to streamline ways that we involve and engage the diaspora communities in the affairs of Nigeria. Now, with that said, I think they're starting to see the power that we wield, not only just, and I always say, not only just boiling down to remittances, but in ensuring that we are putting together policies that are reflective of the needs and the concerns of those who are in Nigeria, but also policies that have a dual nature that can also benefit us back here, back home.
Does the endorsement also give them more credibility back home by the diaspora? Maybe.
I think it does, but it's also about follow through and carry out, right? Yeah. And they're starting to understand that things are no longer face value. So it's not about just having meetings and just meeting with us, but we want to see what is being carried out. We want to see the follow-up. We want to see what is the next steps and what are the next stages and how we are being engaged and what capacity you are utilizing the Nigerian diaspora. Like I said before, I always say it, even here in the United States, we wield a strong power, even in elections here. And I think that's a power that we also need to see in ourselves, right? There are other communities here in the United States that are very, very vocal when it comes to national elections here, local and federal. And I think Africans in the diaspora here in the United States also need to be vocal as well when it comes to that. So we play a dual role in making sure that our presence and our voice is heard here in the United States and in our respective homelands. Mm-hmm.
Just quickly, before they tell me to take a break.
Yes, I think we are playing an even more powerful role in terms of helping to you know, that you have diaspora leaders that are going to run for office.
Absolutely.
I think one important point I want to mention is, like in Ethiopian case, mm-hmm. we created an Ethiopian satellite television. Mm-hmm. There was a monopoly of the government of media. Mm-hmm. So that's a pressure point. Actually, mm-hmm. we believe we contribute significantly by breaking the monopoly of the government on information. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there are many avenues through which the diaspora can influence the government.
Yeah. And we'll continue this conversation. Let's take a break. You're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. And we'll have more about discussion in a moment.
On our voices.
voices. We're talking about the news and issues you're talking about,
sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules.
It's time for Our Voices
with me, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick,
and Hadiza Kiari,
and Ayan Bior,
and Orion Itangi Shaka.
It's time for Our Voices.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Well, we appreciate all of the audience feedback. Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook. So be sure to watch our show there and leave a comment. Now let's look at what's on tap for next week's program.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an exclusive interview with the Prime Minister of Buganda, Charles Maiga. Buganda is the largest, most influential kingdom in Uganda that includes Kampala, the capital. Buganda and the future on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Well, today we are talking about the role and influence of the African diaspora. Our guests are Yetunde Odubesan Omede, visiting professor of global affairs and politics at Farmingdale State College Department of History, Politics and Geography, and she's also a member of the United People for African Congress. Emira Woods, who works with SHINE, a global campaign dedicated to ending energy poverty. She's also a member of Africa Rising for Justice, Peace and Dignity. And Gizao Legese, founding member of Vision Ethiopia, a forum of intellectuals created to rethink the future of Ethiopia. So, if we go back to what I wanted to, let me go to Emira, because of the way I've watched you in your activities here and elsewhere, in terms of what role the diaspora play here in Washington and how it the extent to which it affects or has influence on the African continent, what would you say? Because there are people who see, you know, protests or demonstrations or Africans at the up at the Congress fronting issues that are to do with Africa. What do you think that does on issues that affect Africans on the continent?
So I see the diaspora as the ambassadors of our countries, right, on our continent. I think the, you know, often you have embassies that do a formal role, but the diaspora plays a much more powerful role because they actually elevate issues way before the U.S. media, the international media will pay attention to an issue. The diaspora is there talking about it, beating the drum, making sure that those issues are spotlighted. The diaspora is a convening. You have on Capitol Hill, Congressional African Staff Association, mm-hmm. made up of diaspora working on both sides of the aisle. Some are Republicans, some are Democrats, but they're coming together to elevate the interests, the needs, the policies that relate to Africa to help bring about a stronger Africa and a better world. These are diaspora in a day-to-day way that are using their influence to shape public discourse, mm-hmm. to shape policy, and to actually shape the future. I mean, we have to look not only now, but look historically. The anti-apartheid struggle, the whole push to liberate our continent mm-hmm. came because the diaspora also played a role. It's those on the continent and those in the diaspora joining hands mm-hmm. to demand liberty and justice for all. And that is still the mantra for today. Whether it's people organizing around Bring Back Our Girls or Cameroon and the issues
going on in Cameroon or the Horn of Africa, South Sudan. Sudan, especially, you see young women, poets often, right, in the leadership of these movements. The last demonstration on Sudan that I went to, led by young women, had thousands of people, mostly Sudanese, but not exclusively. There were Africans from across the continent and the diaspora, African Americans especially, present to say, we stand for justice. We stand in support of change in Sudan. And people, you know, we're organizing. This is what the diaspora is doing. And I think what we see is especially young diaspora leaders involved in, for example, the Black Lives Matter, in the leadership of the Black Lives Matter, using social media in creative ways.
At the end of the day, we're also black.
Absolutely.
And sometimes on some of those isses, just a little bit about, you know, we mentioned some of the elected, you know, Africans to positions leadership here in the United States. And we have organizations like the United People for African Congress. And we know they advocate a lot for more Africans getting involved in American politics and possibly getting elected.
Yeah.
To an African sitting in Abuja or in Nairobi or Liberia, why is that? Why should that be of interest to them?
It should be of interest to them. I remember, you know, during my time, you know, in Newark, New Jersey, with the African Commission, and we brought a delegation of city and state officials to Nigeria. And just through that linkage, was able to create a sister city with Lagos and Newark. And that bridge partnerships, economic partnerships, educational initiatives. So it actually does matter and actually does have weight when an elected official is of African descent, where they can use that duality in the position that they have to either promote or engage in initiatives that will serve as bridging the gap between the Africans and the diaspora, their constituents, and opening that door of opportunity and welcoming those who live in their communities to the African continent. Many of those state and city, city and state officials that we brought to Nigeria, they'd never been to the African continent before, you know. So for them, it was an eye-opener, and it was an experience of, wow, so how do we engage this rich history into our own, right? How do we facilitate such magnificence and innovative work that's happening there? How do we bridge that gap? And so I've even seen here, you know, as a professor, we're very big on, you know, global, you know, issues. And so what we always do is that, how do we also connect with educators who are back home, right? So we have systems in place where we are able to talk to educators who are in various universities in African countries to see what the common dualities and different synergies are, to expose our students. So if I teach a course on imperialism, right, and so if we go to the Scramble for Africa and I'm teaching them about the history of Africa, what best ways for them to also engage and also understand the history of Africa by also even seeing students face-to-face with the technology that has been afforded to us. So there's so many ways of synergies that those who are in elected position can create to foster this idea of global collaboration that we're seeking.
Yes, and Gizal, definitely the Ethiopian community very involved in local politics, but also, of course, in business. You see that as a person in Ethiopia looking out and saying, we can learn a lot from our brothers who left the continent and are doing great things across the oceans. You see that?
Yes, as we said earlier, many Ethiopians bring their families. They go to colleges, they get trainings and go back home. Also in the business area, as you said, business incubation will be started here. People here will be financing some projects and transfer the skills they observe. I think one other area I want to talk about is our presence, the other impact, a very important impact is our kids.
Yes,
our kids are cross-pollinating or introducing Africa, not through written words, but practical life. And in every university, from Harvard to Ivy League schools, there are Africans. They have friends from all over the world. So Africa will be represented not only by us, by our kids. Our culture, there are, as you said, there are so many Ethiopian restaurants, Ghanaian restaurants, African restaurants. So the diaspora should be, its contribution is not only the current one. As we go forward, our cultures will be impacted, cross-pollinated by artists here versus Ethiopian. There are collaboration. Ethiopian arts here and there, they collaborate. In Ethiopia, there are people who do rap. Mm-hmm. It was never known yeah. rap. But it is done not in a fully American mm-hmm. way, but in a cross-pollinated way. Mm-hmm. So I think the important part, I think, as we approach this is what we should work, our generation, what we should concentrate on is to ensure that our kids yeah. are tied to the people back home and they will continue to contribute in that area.
Yeah. I'm a first-generation Nigerian-American, born and raised here.
Yes.
And so fortunately, my parents brought me and my brother back to Nigeria over the summers to visit family. And what I realized growing up, I said, you know what? This is who I am. This is my identity. I am a Nigerian-American, and I should be very, very proud of that. And so what we're seeing now in this generation is that they realize that in order, you don't need to lose who you are to chase the American dream. Mm-hmm. That the American dream is composed of being proud of who you are.
Yes.
You know, we're proud of our names, right, of our cultures, and we bring that to every aspect in the workplace, in the classroom, in our board meetings. Because again, we're that representation of America and also of our country, of where our parents come from. And so we don't need to lose one to appease the other.
Yeah.
That we can balance the two and we can do it in a very beautiful and innovative and progressive way, and which is where you're seeing the new generation of the children coming in.
My son used to tell me would be very kind of disturbed when he gets an immigrant kid saying, oh, my parents are from Nigeria, I'm American.
Mm.
But it's like, you really could... You cannot deny your identity. Mm-hmm. You may have been born here, but of Nigerian origin, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like my children, who I'm so proud of, you know,
they're beautifully dressed like you.
Thank you. They're here with us today, mm-hmm. and really honored for that. And you know, they grew up knowing that they may have been born in the U.S., but they are African,
mm-hmm.
and so they are in essence African Americans, mm-hmm. and they own that.
Mm-hmm.
They own that kind of joint dual heritage, and they also carry it. You know, they're both students of public health, and so they carry it into their chosen profession. And so I think we've got to
I saw your son.
Yes.
Don't lose hope. When he turns a little older,
yes,
he will claim his
kid. Yes, they're very frequently. So he's very capable. There's no problem.
My kids are like now. They have flags. There are art from Ethiopia.
Yeah.
If they buy art, they buy Ethiopian art and all that.
Yes, no apologies.
They can't escape it.
Exactly. What do you call the thing? The license plate holder on the car.
Oh, Maryland.
100% Liberia. I was hugging the horn. Right? It's things like that you see, especially young people.
Mm-hmm.
They are
mm-hmm.
identifying, and it's extraordinary to
mm-hmm.
see.
Yeah.
And I guess one concrete example at the time of the Ebola crisis in Liberia was an amazing opportunity. It wasn't just Liberia. It was Liberia, Guinea, Sierra Leone, mostly impacted. And now you see a similar crisis in the Democratic Republic of the Congo.
Yes.
But there you have diaspora technicians, right?
Mm-hmm.
People who bring the technical expertise.
Yeah.
They are techies wanting to use the skills that they have learned working around the world to improve the health systems in our country.
Okay.
So
I mean,
what you see is like concrete skills with your heart dedicated to improving the continent and building a better world.
Right.
And those two are coming together to create new innovations in areas of clean energy in areas of healthcare as well.
Actually, there are about, I think, 26,000 Nigerian doctors here. But if I may stay with you, Giza, in terms of especially the politics of the African countries. You know, there's a lot of ethnic and ethnicizations of that, or weaponizing ethnicity for political ends.
Mm-hmm.
How do those in the diaspora help change perhaps the traditional way of seeing politics, where people get balkanized along ethnic lines, especially during election time, or when there's some issues that are really very critical to the future of a country? How do you do that? Because there have been accusations that some of the African people in the diaspora have become even more ethnicized than even those back home.
Yeah,
that's true. In Ethiopia particularly, our politics has been ethnicized. Actually, the biggest challenge for Dr. Abiy is politics, the currency of politics is ethnicity.
Mm-hmm.
You become a minister because you are from this ethnic group or that ethnic group. I think the contribution of the diaspora is very, very significant. There are a few ways we have approached it. One is In Ethiopia, during the previous two governments, Meles and Haile Mariam, all the media was controlled by the government, and all the news, propaganda, all anything that was done ethnicized. It was presented in an ethnic framework. By opening radio and TV stations abroad, we broke that. We enabled different ethnic groups to have their own programs, their own broadcast programs, so that people back home can see that we can work together. We are one people. We want the same thing, but to in terms of politics, we don't have to ethnicize our politics. The other thing is, I think one of the most important things we do is how we live here. When we live here, the cross-pollination we do, we meet, we go to the same churches, Ethiopians. Mm-hmm. We have food from different ethnic groups in our restaurants. We go to the different meetings and debate, like I mentioned Vision Ethiopia. We invite the different the elites of the different ethnic groups to debate the issues. So these are the type of issues we have been doing. And also in back home, we support both materially, in terms of literature, in terms of studies, we support those political forces that try to de-ethnicize the politics mm-hmm. back home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Dr. Etunde, as a big African diaspora, we mentioned something about the Africa Union. Mm-hmm. Is there a way the Africa Union, as an umbrella body, can tap into the African diaspora, you know, as a whole, not necessarily looking at the individual, you know, country-based groups?
I think absolutely. I think there's, you know, formidable ways where they can devise a plan of how they create and have a roadmap of unity. A unified, as their, you know, priority is to create a unified African nation, you know, with the 54 nations, but at the same time, a unified African diaspora where we all see ourselves under one umbrella, right? And that we don't necessarily have competing priorities and competing issues, but we actually have one same agenda. And that same agenda is possibly for a unity, same good agenda for great education, good governance, ethical leadership. And so these are things that will cross all country lines that many people can agree with. And I think if they create a roadmap where there are four or five major pillars that are universal in language, right? Mm-hmm. So creating almost like a universal declaration of human rights, but maybe a universal declaration of African unity, right? And what that actually outlines. And I think that's sort of a strategic way and a strategic step for them forward. They still have a lot of work to do. But like I said, I think with the skills and the knowledge that we have, we're always here to provide those recommendations and those policy outlines that's necessary to create such a strategic plan.
And one thing I've seen that perhaps being in the diaspora has given some kind of a different perspective and advantage is that someone like, you know, all of us here, Emira, suddenly you see yourself more of an African citizen than Liberian even.
Well, so. I see myself as a Pan-Africanist.
Pan-Africanist. So some of the things, you've been continent. Out there, you're fighting to fight, you know, to eliminate poverty across the continent to end this, you know, the chronic shortage of electricity and all that. Yeah. At a point, at the level of the Africa Union, do you think, is there a way that could be recognized such that just the same way we have the Africa Union representative here in the United States, Dr. Chiomboni, that there could actually be a representative of the African diaspora to the Africa Union who can go and articulate some of the issues which help the Africa Union to say, okay, this is how, you know, you could represent us up in Washington or in the UK or whatever the case
may be. Well, a few years ago, the African Union did have a summit of the African diaspora in South Africa, and there was a you know, so the plans have been there, but I think, you know, not properly perhaps resourced, and so the implementation may have not been as it could be, right? Mm-hmm. So I think the idea is that this Region 6 would be a vital link for the continent, and that there, you know, things like the diaspora database, which were started in the diaspora summit, you know, to bring forward a database of diaspora skill sets across the board, and to create a database that would be accessible to the African Union. Mm-hmm. This was one of the initiatives. Clearly, the African Union and its mission here in Washington D.C. has put forward diaspora bonds and ways that, you know, resources could be generated.
generated to go towards critical initiatives of the, especially of the continent and of the you know, of the African Union, to have it less dependent on, you know, foreign entities, right? To have the diaspora more of a source for that. I think, you know, the elements of it are there. I think more needs to be done to kind of jumpstart the implementation to make sure that, that it reaches its full potential. I do think outside of government, outside the African Union, you have groups like Africans Rising for Justice, Peace, and Dignity that not only reach out to social movements across the continent, but also reach out to the diaspora and have that as a core part of their mandate. So I think, you know, whether it's social movements or governments, there is this recognition that the diaspora is pivotal for achieving achieving the goals. And when you have, again, a continent that's at the epicenter of climate catastrophe, you know, the continent that, that is, has contributed the least, you know, in terms of dirty energy, right? But has actually suffered the most in terms of the rise in temperature already. I think what you have is a continent that is ready to use the skills of the diaspora to say, let's unleash all of our capacity, all of our creativity to make sure that we're solving the dilemmas of the future, things like energy poverty and the, and other key challenges of the continent.
Yeah, let's get Geza here. And do you think this perhaps could call for a more unified or perhaps a new African diaspora organization, which could bring people of the different countries together and form some kind of a body that will also kind of represent the different, you know, nationalities that are here in Washington or in the United States. That way there could be a common voice, you know, one voice that can be representing the continent in Africa at the continental level, Africa Union level.
Yes, I very much agree for need for the need for such an organization. Particularly, we should start small. It could be advocating for Africa in the United States or in some other, or advocating for green energy or advocating for democratization. But as I said earlier, I don't expect anything from AU, African Union. I think African Union, as you say, as we implied a little earlier, are a little bit too scared of us. I don't know what the right word is, because we are exposed to more accountable, more transparent governments. They may be a little suspicious. But I think the social activists or the intellectuals and the professors and the young students should start a group which starts with a very narrow scope, if you will, choose two, three areas where we can leverage our resources, our knowledge, our skills, and then address it. I mean, I think we, the South Africans, apartheid case, case an example. I remember when we had a lot of demonstration on Mass Avenue. On you probably remember. I think we need an affirmative case. It could be democratization. So, for example, there are failed state like Somalia, or I don't know, we can case
South Sudan.
Sudan, or Cameroon. I mean, the Anglophones and the Franco, even Ethiopia until a year ago. I think we need to start something small, focused, and the success we get out of that will feed and grow this effort. But it is very important also, if we start now, as we talked about, the young people around us, our kids, will follow that. And the next politicians in the United States, in England, in Germany, will be at least exposed to Ethiopians. If they are not Ethiopians or Liberians or Nigerians, Nigerians already are very well represented. So I think if we start narrow and focus on it, we have a good chance to improve the livelihood of all Africans.
You see, I've thrown a challenge out there. So
you know, we have a young population bulge in the African continent. So I think the age was 24. Majority of people in the African continent are under the age of 24. So again, that is a critical area. That is a critical area, and we see that a lot of our issues is emanating also out of either ignoring that area, not providing the needs that's necessary to young people, where it's, you know, good education, employment, ensuring that they don't fall into any sort of deviant acts because there are no other resources that are available to them. So,
you know, the elected officials, you know, at some time, you know, their time will, you know, pass because, yeah. we know with the whole godfatherism and, you know, politics in African countries and in other parts of the world. But there's a need for a transfer of power.
Yeah.
And there's a need for a new generation to now assume leadership positions. And hopefully we may see a shift once that does happen. Mm-hmm. But until then, if those who continue to hold on to power and don't want to relinquish it to the young people, we're going to continue going through conflict and the motions of a desperate sort of population that desperately wants to see the progression of their country but are unable to sit in the position to do that.
Yes. I want to take one question around. Mm-hmm. One of the things that has been very disturbing, and we have very few minutes left, is that you see African leaders, when they fall sick, they go abroad. They go to London, for example, and spend months there being treated by a Nigerian doctor or an Ethiopian doctor.
Exactly.
Is there a way in which the Africans in the diaspora can actually, instead of, I'm not saying they don't welcome them, but actually challenging them to instead help build hospitals back home, and then they can get whatever help they need from the diaspora to equip those hospitals. Mm-hmm. And in fact, their doctors, mm-hmm. the doctors that they come to see here mm-hmm. are mostly doctors from Africa. Then they can go to Africa and be treated there as a way of also dignifying the people they represent, mm-hmm. that they have hospitals that are good enough for them, such that their people can also believe
that
they're good enough for them.
You hit the nail on the head, Vincent. I think the critical issue is that there are some systemic problems that have to be addressed. If you continue to have, let's be frank, you're here in Washington, the World Bank, International Monetary Fund, these international financial institutions saying, don't spend on public sector, education, health, right? You know, deprioritizing those basic building blocks of healthy societies, it will be impossible to address the problems with healthcare. Mm-hmm. I think what we need to say is we've got to push against privatization of healthcare. Mm-hmm. Healthcare should be affordable and available for everybody, as should clean energy, so that people have a right to kind of have lights to read the books, to be able to educate their children. Mm-hmm. So these fundamental building blocks should be available to all. And government resources, again, we've got to figure out the proper taxation.
Absolutely.
Africa is a wealthy continent, but yet, you know, the multinational corporations are not paying their fair share.
Absolutely.
So you have an outflow of resources.
Or so years after independence, Africa shouldn't be.
We need the resources on the continent for clean energy, for health care, for also education for all.
It's interesting, Dr. Abiy, the very popular Ethiopian minister, prime minister, just had a meeting with the doctors. Except a few hospitals, all hospitals are owned by the government. It's a public hospital. Mm-hmm. So the doctors and the health staff asked for a meeting with the prime minister. He met with them. He addressed them for a few hours, and he was heavily criticized. The issue you raised was raised. Mm-hmm. Why you guys, politicians, go to Thailand or South Africa or London, and this was raised. I think, to me, one of the things really we should concentrate on, I mean, is we Africans, particularly given that the average African is 70%, I think, is less than 24%, we need to start from being responsible. The individual African has to demand democracy, accountability. And what we see in Africa is either through ethnicity or through religion or through some temporary thing, we allow the governments to cheat us, to be honest. We allow them to stay in power and buy different expensive cars and go abroad. I think you have time.
Let me give you the last word here. We have just less than a minute.
So I basically think that, you know, the African agenda should be the number one priority. There are many competing agendas. They have the Western agenda. You mentioned the IMF and the WTO and the World Bank. And yes, they have their own agenda as well. But if we also want to see a progressive African nation where the 54 countries are coming together and putting the priority of not only the young people, but ensuring that education and healthcare are one of the major areas of security, we can can really come together and really emerge into the Africa that the world should know us as. There's natural resources that we have that are a gift to us. It's not a curse, right? They say petropolitics, right? But the idea is that how do we harness that? How do we harness the innovation that comes out of the young people in our population? How do we engage the African diaspora? And I believe that we have put forth policies, recommendations to do that.
Well, we'll have another hour to continue this conversation. On that note, our guest today, well, Yetunde Odubesan Omere, Emir Woods, and Gizao Legese. Thank you to our audience for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. And from all of us here in Washington, have a good evening. Thank you.